We have eyes at the field.
Not a ball game without a hot dog. Who wants a hot dog?
And at home.
Buffering.
This is Field and Stream with Joe Drake and Trevor Huth.
And welcome to Field and Stream. My name is Trevor Huth. Making his return is the man who's ran more miles in the last day than I have in the last 3 years, Tyler Jennings. Tyler, what's up, man?
Not much. How are you doing, sir?
Good. It's great to have you back. I'm excited. Let's get this out of the way, Tyler. Your favorite MLB team is NC State, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. I only ask because we have a couple guys who root for the team that I also root for joining us today. And that is Rogelio Castillo and Chris Brown. Rogelio, what's up, man?
Ellen, how you guys doing? I'm doing fantastic. I can't really complain.
Well, we're happy to have you on. And Chris, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you guys recognize Rogelio's voice for some reason, it's because he is the genius mastermind behind our intro. So you just heard him intro us, and then I got to intro him. It's kind of a cool thing. I don't know. So
this is it's Inception stuff right now.
Introception.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Off to a rip-roaring start here. So we're going to hear more from Rogelio and Chris later. We're going to talk a lot about the Tigers today, which I'm very excited about. But first, Tyler, we have to go through your live looks, as is customary. So you got to see Georgia Tech this past week. So that means Kevin Parada.
Absolutely. And we're going to go over 2 weeks here because they had NHSI and then obviously Kevin Parada. So I'll start with NHSI first. Going to start with that Dylan Lesko, Caden Dana matchup we had because that was the biggest matchup of that whole event. Dylan Lesko, you know, best arm and he's the best prep arm we've had in like the past 10 years, it feels like. 94, 97, nothing below 94 through four innings. Devilish changeup at like 81, 82. And he would snap off a couple curveballs that were like 3,000 RPMs. He threw three of them and got swing and misses on two of them. You know, small sample size, but it's like, that's ridiculous from a prep guy. And then Caden Dana himself was like 92, 95. Good slider, good curveball. So that was the like the best part of that entire tournament, apart from the fact that the weather decided to play games with us. There was Seth Keller. He is a two-way guy from Hanover High School, which is the same school as Levi Heisman. He actually broke the NHSI record held by Jack Flaherty of strikeouts in a game. Flaherty had 15 a couple years ago, and Keller now has 16. Strikeout 16 in seven innings. It's like 91-95, violent delivery, good slider, good changeup. On the hitter side of things, Derek Curiel was probably the best hitter there, and that name sounds familiar because he's the top prospect in 2024. Pretty insane to think that a 24 prospect would be the best hitter at this event, but he looked as if, you know, he could be pro ready right now. Very good bat the ball skills, very smart defensively in center field, good arm, threw out a couple guys as well. And the last guy from that event was Jake Clementi. He's a guy that was like 90, 92 last summer. Now he's up to 96. He can hit, he's holding that velo like 94, 95 in the fifth and sixth innings. Changeup's all right. It's like a high 80s pitch, and then slider's kind of just like a get me over, not really impressive. So the fastball is the calling card, but it bores in on anyone at the plate. It's a very good pitch. Another guy I wanted to kind of touch on too, he wasn't at HSI, but I saw him a couple days ago, Jackson Humphreys from Fuquay Arena. He's a local kid for me. Came out of Super 60, was pumping 96, and now he's like 90, 93, pumped to four. I love the off-speed stuff. The command's a bit iffy, but like off-speed, you could probably put like a future 60 on the slider, and the curveball is like a 55. He's a very fun arm, and I think if you get in the right order, you're going to get him dialed down with the delivery because it's not repeatable. But he's a good arm. I think if you get him with twin like early part of day two, he's a good arm. And then of course Kevin Parada. There's a good chance he doesn't make it out of the top five in this upcoming draft. He had three homers over the weekend. Two of them were Oppo on Friday, hit a grand slam on Sunday. Bat the ball skills are insane. He's like a potential plus hitter with like double plus power. That alone is just a ridiculous bat. It's the best college bat in this class. It's a fun profile. There's the questions if he can, you know, stay behind the plate. He looked better this weekend than I saw him before, but I like the stuff there. So that's the end of the live list. We're keeping it short today.
All right, keeping it short. I like that. So because you're keeping it short, let me put you on the spot with a question, Tyler.
Okay.
Since you're our resident draft expert on this podcast, the Tigers, which is, of course, our theme today, pick 12th this year. So who – I call your shot. Who are the Tigers taking at 12?
Ooh, that is a good question. So I've seen Daniel Susek in this spot. Gavin Cross is another guy. I feel like you guys go hitter this year. I'm going to go with Gavin Cross, mainly because Susek might already be gone at that point, just because of how good of a bat he is, and he has a better future in the backstop position than Parada, in my opinion. But Cross is just across the board a really good profile to have. It's good bat the ball, all feels power. It's probably plus power in the future. He can run. He plays center field pretty well. And if he doesn't work out in center field, that's a right fielder with a can of an arm back there. That's a good profile to have if you're the Tigers. So I'm going to go Gavin Cross there.
All right, there you have it. If he gets it wrong, yell at him. His Twitter handle is at TylerJennings24. So ruin his life if he gets that wrong on draft day. But speaking of draft day, speaking of first-round picks, third overall last year, Jackson Job. That's who the Tigers took. And Jackson Job made his debut, and we got to see it. Oh, my goodness. Florida State League has two streams, and we were lucky enough that the Lakeland was playing against one of them. That was Bradenton. So, Chris, why don't we start with you here? What were your impressions after watching Jackson Job in his one inning of work?
Yeah, you wonder if the Tigers snuck him in there just because they knew people could watch it. Probably not. They probably don't care about that. But, boy, yeah, we're thankful. I don't know. Yeah, it was one inning of a guy that we've not seen pitch in any capacity really since, what, last May? Almost a full year. And, yeah, the stuff was absurd. It was the sort of stuff that you heard about, right? It was a mid-90s fastball, a breaking ball with ridiculous spin. The fastball had good spin, too. But he looked unpolished, right? He hasn't pitched in a year. It's his debut. He wasn't throwing a ton of strikes. He didn't get any help from his defense, and his catcher didn't seem to have any clue of where the ball was going. But, yeah, I saw what I wanted to out of him, which was stuff. And, it's a high school pitcher, so it's gonna take some time. But I was pleased with what I saw.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's the unicorn stuff profile. It was good to see he faked out the catcher almost with his, I think it was his first slider, maybe it was his second, but he threw it. And De La Cruz, the catcher, just had no idea. It looked like he had never caught Joe before, or maybe never seen a slider before. One of the two. I'm pretty sure it'd be the first one, but yeah, it was not great. Rogelio, do you have anything to add? Because I know that Twitter had some fun takes about Jackson Job, so I want to hear yours.
Well, I thought Jackson Job, the slider movement. One of the followers, I think he's got a cool name, Father Yoda, caught the movement of that slider and how much it went off the plate and just. No one stood a chance, and I thought he pitched fine. I thought the only thing that I would have a concern with, and I was talking to a fellow person who used to evaluate talent, said that you'd like to see hopefully Joe get some more thicker legs to kind of grow a little bit. But overall, I thought he was fine. I again, the product of bad defense aside, I thought that for them to get 19-20 pitches, I thought that was fine too. This is the first outing for him. This is something that he is a project, and I know a lot of Tiger fans were upset because they drafted a project at that spot where you see all the shortstops right now, like Meyer, off to a good start. But again, this is something that the Tigers feel confident about, their the Manuel Sequeiros in the world and the Christian Santanas, then this pick's fine.
Yeah, and the defense you mentioned, of course, coming from, unfortunately, one of my favorite guys down in Lakeland, that's Isaac Pacheco, who is decidedly not a shortstop, I'm guessing, in the long term. But that's where they have him right now. For me, and Tyler, we're going to talk to you here in a second, but for me, I was much like Chris. I just wanted to see the stuff, right? Like, you can teach that command. You could teach him to pitch and sequence and all that stuff. What you can't teach is 3,000 RPMs on a slider or 2,500 on a fastball. Like, that stuff you cannot teach. And so if he's still showing that, and he's showing that, he really didn't get rocked by any means. He gave up a hit. He walked a guy. And of course, the error eventually led in two unearned runs. Like, that wasn't terrible. He wasn't missing bats. And I think that's what was scaring people the most. But I have a feeling he'll start missing bats at some point. So Tyler, part of that, of course, being because of this unicorn type data profile he has. So can you kind of speak a little bit on that type of spin and what that does for a pitcher?
Yeah. So one thing with Joe too, that I kind of want to mention too, he's more of a, he's a fresher arm. Cause really he didn't focus on pitching until, you know, PG National of 2020. Cause he came into event as a shortstop and looked pretty good. And then he come on the mound and all of a sudden you see spin rates of 3,200 and you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. That's pretty good from a guy that, you know, doesn't really have much pitching experience. Yeah. So it's like, it's an interesting concept with spin. Cause obviously, you know, the higher spin you see as a scout, the more intrigued you're going to be. It's like, that kid's got pretty good field of spin. With Joe having that kind of spin rate, obviously the movement's going to be affected by it because of how much he's ripping it off at the release. It's a very fun pitch because you mentioned it. It started off at, you know, inside part of the plate, and then all of a sudden it's, you know, left-handed batter's box. Spin in terms of movement, though, doesn't necessarily correlate, in my opinion, mainly because there's guys out there that don't really have that field of spin, but you know they still have that good shape to the breaking balls. So that's just my take on it. Personally, it's obviously nice to see that kind of spin rates, but seeing something move like that too, that's just beautiful. That's like a future 70 grade slider right there.
And I think it was Dallas Braden who said if he wants to throw it for a strike, he'll have to start it in the dugout. Have to yes. aim for the dugout and have it break across the plate. That's, you know, Dallas Braden's got a pretty good opinion there.
And you know, there's one thing that reminds me of, you know, Matt Manning is not a data monster by any means right now. He's kind of a confusing data pitcher, but he was a similar, somewhat raw high school arm with plus athleticism. And he was a guy who also kind of was held back a bit in his first pro year. I think he was in extended for a while and came up and only made it maybe a handful of starts in Connecticut and maybe eventually made it to West Michigan. But I also remember him having some really wild outings early on and not really looking all impressive. And 2 years later, he was the Eastern League Pitcher of the Year. Like, guys this athletic can really take a leap very quickly. And I think that's very possible from Job. Again, you want him to continue to get better. Manning kind of seemed to top out Double A, still figuring it out at the major league level. But he's a big leaguer, and that was a top 10 high school pick. And so I think that's worked out, at least to some degree. You don't have to worry about him going full Riley Pine on you. And it's going to take some time. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's very possible that someone like Joe could take a massive leap at any time.
You know what, Riley Pine, though, he's come back and he is actually looking really good. He's thrown a lot of strikes and it's
nice. Awesome to hear.
It's really fun to see. It really is. And with Manning, that is the old development team too. That is not as highly regarded as the one that the Tigers have right now that we're working with Manning. So that's also something I think I don't know. I just want to dream on Job because I think that's awesome. So Tyler, I want to go back to spin for a second and talk about fastball spin because he does have good fastball spin, you know, at 2,500 RPM. So what does that kind of spin do for a fastball?
Ooh, that is a very good question, actually.
Thank you. I try to ask good questions.
Say what?
I try to ask good questions. It's part of my job here.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, that's got to happen when you're the host of the show. No, but like with a fastball spin, obviously, if you have a lower spin rate, you're looking more of like a sinker kind of pitch. Classic example for me personally, just looking at like the college ranks right now, Nate Savino was one of the guys we've talked in the draft chat a couple times where it's like, okay, his spin rates are like 1,800, which is like, yeah, that's a normal changeup spin rate. But with a sinker, that's pretty good. With the league average on the four-seamer last year, I do believe, was like 2,300, something like that, because it's gone up from like 21 to 22 to 23. 2,500 RPMs is pretty fun. And obviously, when you get that much backspin on the baseball, too, vertical break becomes a thing, too. You know, I think we mentioned this before the show, too. It saw something like Job had like a 15, 16 IVB on his fastball, but like the machine was a little hot or something like that. So it's like 12, 13, which, you know, there's stuff to work on there. Add some more ride to that fastball and you're looking at a pitch that's going to play really, really well with that, the spin rates of 2,500. I think that's going to be something that the Tigers are going to have to focus on here in the next couple of years. But obviously, you know, Jove's young. He's got the athleticism to pull this off. I think it, a couple years from now, you're looking at one of the better arms in the minor leagues.
I did want to add.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, I'm sorry, Trevor. Go ahead.
No, you, I was going to make a joke. You go right ahead.
What I was going to say was, and this is follows in line for what you two guys follow the Dodger system. And you mentioned this last night, Trevor. And I started thinking about this earlier. When you saw a couple guys at Great Lakes last year go one or two innings. And this is something that fans, I don't think, are Tiger fans are going to get you are going to have to get used to, because the Dodgers, the way they've been able to, I'm drawing a blank, some of the guys we talked about yesterday, but
Bobby Miller, Clayton Beter, yeah. The two main examples of guys who went like an inning or two, maybe three max. I think I remember them in three inning stints against West Michigan, just making them look silly. But yeah, the shorter stints.
Yeah, the shorter stints. And Miller, I think, he's doing well in Double A right now for Tulsa. But so Beter. So yeah, and I'm not surprised, but so I think Tiger fans are not accustomed to it. Maybe that's why some of that quote unquote outrage was out there yesterday. But if that's the way with all with Gabe Rivas there, I trust the process with that so far, because they know the Dodgers know a thing or two about developing pitchers out of nowhere. So
yeah, for sure. And again, look at what the Dodgers do. I think back to the example of Emmett Sheehan. Who I know that you guys have seen, they find these little things. Emmett Sheehan's got a really flat approach, a really flat VAA with his fastball. And they build off of that. They get a platform for development and they kind of leap from there. And that's kind of what the Tigers have started doing, right? Obviously Jove's got a very nice platform to leap off of, but Aaron Haas has a slider that's up near 3,000 RPMs. I think it was just shy at like 2,800, 2,900. And they just find those types of things and they can build from there and see what they have. And I don't know. I love that personally. And speaking of Haas, speaking of Jobe, speaking of the draft, guys, the Tigers seem to have stepped up their draft game lately. And it is awesome. I think I really see the start of that as that shortened 2020 draft, when you get, you know, Spencer Torkelson, Dylan Dingler, Daniel Cabrera, Colt Keith, Gage Workman, and I'm going to throw Wilmer Flores in there just because he was an undrafted free agent. But Rogelio, we could start with you on this one, man. But have you seen, is it just me or is there an actual improvement here in the drafting of the Tigers?
I would have to say so, because for how many drafts that Chris and I have gone through and go, nope, nah, maybe one arm or whatever the case may be. Last year, for how many games we went to, it was refreshing to see as many kind of these arms or even just talent that just were like, well, that's interesting. We didn't expect that. Like Dingler, for example, I knew coming in that he had a lot of, I don't want to say hype, but we heard good things about him and they're able to draft him. And we actually, I remember the draft night before I jumped in the pool, I was like, it was after I jumped in the pool where, by the way, Tyler, we make a kind of a thing when we do draft night is, if a team makes an outrageous pick out of the slot or not projected, I jump in the pool. And I just, it's silly, it's stupid, but the Orioles did that with Halston. The big splash. Yeah, the big splash. Yeah. So.
With Kerstad. Kerstad was a pool jump guy.
Kerstad, yep.
Yeah. Yes, he was. But no, it was something that, I mean, even with like going down to Lakeland last year, and seeing for Eric De La Rosa, for example, who was kind of he struggled in West Michigan the year before, he didn't get off the good start in Connecticut either. And then last year, when I saw him in Lakeland, it was a different Eric De La Rosa. He was hitting the ball to all fields, hitting it with power. And that's where I knew there was a little bit of a difference. It was the guys they had within their system that all of a sudden, who weren't producing before, just somehow turned it around. I mean, even with Ryan Kreidler, he started off really rough in Connecticut. Then the pandemic happened. It was night and day, and we started the season at Double A. But as far as guys being drafted, again, just some of the gems in the later rounds is something that I can never put in the same sentence with the Tigers before.
I mean, there was a point in the draft where it was like, okay, Alex Fajardo, and I hope that works because there's nothing else. I can't remember if that draft or not, but there's a draft where you're like, there's one guy, like cross your fingers. Was it that one?
That was 2017. Yeah, and I remember thinking that there was a very obvious change to the draft philosophy the next year, 2018. And part of that was just, I think, them picking first overall and having extra money. But they, it seemed like they were targeting, I don't know, they never seemed to have a whole lot of plan before that, other than, you know, that the old standby was that they always go after hard-throwing SEC right-handers or whatever. You know, they started with Casey Mize that year, but they followed up with a lot of athletic players, and not a lot of them worked out. Like, we're seeing Parker Meadows possibly having a breakout. We can talk about that in a little bit. But they got Scooble later in that draft, and then they got, you know, some guys later in those in the late rounds that I don't know whether to credit their draft or improved development or a combination of both. But we've seen, and we don't know necessarily if these guys are going to work out or anything, but Garrett Hill is a late 20s round draft pick, and Chavez Fernandez is a late 30s round draft pick. And both of those guys were in the Arizona Fall League, and they look, you know, borderline fringe helpful. I don't know if they're going to make the bigs, but so we saw that in 2018. And then 2019, we saw more of that. And you know, it's not completely gone. They took Nick Quintana second in the second round, and he's been kind of a massive disaster. But you got Riley Green. You got Andre Lipsius, who's kind of an underrated a solid player. He's like fourth in the minors in walks right now, which I'll take. And then Ryan Kreidler was
walked
a big
three times last night.
Yeah. And then you got Bo Brisky, who seemed to come out of nowhere later in the draft. And they got other helpful guys like you mentioned Gavin Cross is a potential draft pick. They have Terry Carpenter out of Virginia Tech, who he's probably not anything more than a minor league soldier, but he's already been up in double A for the second year, and he's hit the power and he's helping. So they're finding useful players. And then, yeah, in 2020, they just it almost like they went to a draft board in I think apart from Trey Cruz, who was the only one who wasn't like the highest player on the board at the time, they just took the top player, which was like, hey, all right, that's something, it's good to see. And for the most part, those guys have really shown some stuff, from Spencer Torkelson, who's already got two bombs in the majors, down to Colt Keith, who was hitting the ball hard in high A as a 20-year-old. So yeah, it's pretty exciting. I mean, he might be 21 now.
Yeah, it is. It is very exciting. And Nick Quintana just that turned into Tucker Barnhart, which is, I think, best possible outcome. I mean, if we'll be honest, that was an awesome trade. And Eric De La Rosa, I know you just mentioned him earlier. He's so interesting because he did come back and perform, and he was hitting well. I did a whole deep dive on Bless You Boys, but it was I'm curious to watch him this year. I haven't really had a chance to dive in and look at what he's doing, but he did this thing called striding down that I spent a whole time on last year. He was where he would stride and it was his eye level would change. He would go down and then come back up or come back up to go down, which I can't remember, but it was not good. I mean, it was amazing. He was hitting doing it. So if he's got a steady eye line, it looked like he might in spring training. So I'm very excited about that. Tyler, I know that you are just a fan of the draft in general, but have you liked the Tigers' drafts the last couple of years?
Sorry, I had to unmute myself there. Yeah, I have enjoyed the Tigers' drafts ever since that Casey Mize draft. You know, the kind of just looking at it here, 2021, love that draft because not only did he have Jackson Jove, you know, 1-3, which is, I think it's still a good pick at this point, even with the short size he had after that. You know, Ty Madden at 32 was a steal because you're looking at a guy that was rumored in the top 10 at one point. Pacheco's looked good. I don't think he's a shortstop. Dylan Smith, Tyler Madison.
Tyler, let's stop there 1 second. I'm sorry. I don't mean to slow your roll. But when you mentioned Jobe to Madden to Pacheco, that's one of the things about Jobe that people who are complaining about the shortstop probably aren't really, you know, thinking through. You don't get Madden and Pacheco without Jobe. Who knows what Marcelo Mayer's signing bonus, who knows what number he gave the Tigers? He could have given him a much higher number than he gave the Red Sox. I mean, we don't know that information, right? So you get Jobe and you find the money and you can get Ty Madden and you can get Isaac Pacheco with your next two picks. Sorry, I thought that was worth mentioning, so I cut you off. Anyway, continue.
All right, it's a good thing you brought that up because there's multiple teams that do that. Baltimore was a good example last year or a couple years ago with Heston Kerstad, and then they went like Jordan Westberg with their second pick or something like that. But you know, Jackson Jobe, you know, he took a bit of discount at 1-3. Pick value was like 7-2. He signed for 6-9, and Ty Madden was $250,000 over slot, and then Pacheco was almost $1 million over slot. So if you don't save that money with Jobe, you don't get those two players. And I think most of these teams are going to go that route now. It's like, well, we can get the discount here, like 1-2 or 1-3, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, we have this guy that might not sign, go to college. Let's just throw a bunch of money at him, see if he signs. it's a good deal because you get a bunch of steals that way. But going back, like Dylan Smith, me and you have talked about Dylan Smith a couple times. Love the guy.
So third round Chris Rogelio and I were Dylan Smith fans all around.
There we go. I love to see it. And then, of course, that five-round draft, which was extremely weird still to this day, but it's like Torkelson 1-1 was kind of a no-brainer. Dylan Dinger was a great pick at 38, even though he's kind of not panned out fully with the bat at this point. Daniel Cabrera, I like. Gage Workman in the fourth round. Granted, he hasn't hit well, but I like the bat coming out of college. And Colt Keith as well in the first round is a pretty good steal. So it's been – they've really turned a corner with the drafting. It's kind of showing too now because all that talent's now starting to get to the big leagues. And sooner or later, Detroit's going to be a threat to deal with in the AL Central. So I'm excited for that.
I remember, I don't know if you ever watched the AL Central, Tyler. That's not a compliment. But
I remember the Trey Cruz pick. I predicted that would be a pick for the Tigers to happen because based off the fact that he is a son of a former major league player, and the Tigers have a type, and they would always do that. They would go some towards – I mean, I looked at the Cody Clemens pick, and I was like, well, Trey Cruz, they need a shortstop, or he has athleticism. They'll pick him. And I remember sitting on Chris's couch when that happened. I jumped up – wait, was that my house? No, I was in my house. That's right. And I jumped up and started like screaming like I was, I was right about something, but it was just kind of, I think this year he's showing some of the signs of why the Tigers drafted him in the first place. He's having a good year in West Michigan.
Yeah. He looks healthy. He really does. And that's a good thing. To show you how much I know about anything in 2020 during that draft, it was the first round they took Torkelson, and I believe the next day was when they had the second pick when they took Dingler. And the entire day from when the draft ended to when the Tigers had that first pick the next day, I was like, just take Daniel Cabrera with it. Just take Daniel Cabrera. And they took Dingler. I'm like, oh! And then they got Cabrera. So that's good. I very much enjoyed that. But all right, I'm going to put you guys on the spot now because that's like 90% of what I do as a host. And I'm going to start with Chris here. What is your favorite pick from the 2020 and then your favorite pick from the 2021 draft?
I
put you right on the spot. That happens a lot.
2020, it's Colt Keith because it was so far against type for the Tigers. You know, they'd taken five consecutive position players. They almost never took high school players out of the top three or four rounds and spent any money on them. And Colt Keith was like a top 50, top 60 out in the draft, depending on what you looked at. Maybe, I don't know, top 100 at least. And it was one of those situations where after he didn't go in like the first three rounds, you figure he's going to college. And they just called him and realized like, oh, he actually wants to play. Let's give him $500,000. And I still don't know what his ceiling is, but he had a great first year in pro ball. He hits the ball hard. I think he needs to get a little loft. And I'm not entirely sure he's going to stick on the infield dirt. He doesn't, his hands aren't terribly soft to me. But he's got plenty of arms, so he might be able to move off to the right field if he has to. I really dug that pick last year. And this year, it was Dylan Smith because he was – that's like my Rogelio situation. I took him in our mock draft at our website because he was just a guy – you know, it's one of those rare college pitchers who seems to still have some upside, some athleticism and projection left. And he's a guy – and when you mention how they save money – on Job or had extra money. Dylan Smith also got a higher than expected bonus or higher than slot. He wasn't too much higher, but they basically gave him every last cent that they had. And he was the last one to sign. And it was like, you don't get that guy if you don't save a little money up top. And I think, yeah, I mean, he's a guy who's already a top 10 prospect in the system, some sites. And so, yeah, that guy in the third round was great.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Tyler, I'm going to go to you next. I'm going to see if you can do this off the top of your head as a non-Tigers fan. 2020, 2021, what do you got? Who are your picks for the Tigers?
2020, my favorite pick out of that draft was Gage Workman. I just love that bat coming out of college because Arizona State that year was just absolutely downright insane because they had like six or seven draft picks pretty early on too. He obviously hasn't panned out, but I mean, I still love that profile. Colt Keith was also one of my favorites too. 2021, Dylan Smith was one of my favorite picks. Me and Joe just loved Dylan Smith with Alabama at the time because we're like, this is a guy that, if you put him in the right organization, he's going to be throwing cheddar at some point. And now he's like 92, 94, I love the breaking ball. The change is going to obviously come as he gets farther into pro ball here, but I like the stuff so far. I think Dylan Smith is probably one of the better picks of the early part of day two, and I think he might end up being one of the bigger steals from this draft class, in my opinion.
And I had mentioned this a couple times on Twitter and on the Tigers Minor League Report podcast last night. Smith went from going fastball heavy in his first outing to breaking ball heavy early on the second outing. And I love when pitchers do that. I think it's great that he was working on that. Rogelio, time for you to go on the spot and see what you got.
Well, I would say Dingler was my favorite pick in the 2020 draft, only because it was very un-Tiger-like in a sense, because the Tigers, with, in terms of catching Sam McMillan, Joey Morgan, it's been a bad road of things. But to see the Tigers grab a catcher with that kind of a athleticism who played the outfield at Ohio State, I definitely did not expect that coming. The Tigers seem to have like this predictability with that. And I thought that maybe it would be gun shy when it comes to catchers, because they've done a terrible job of drafting catchers in the last 5 years or so. And as far as the 2021 draft, I'd probably go with Tanner Kohlhepp out of the University of Notre Dame, because his delivery is so funky and he's able to generate that kind of power through his, well, he's got a really good fastball. His off-speed stuff looks really promising, although he's injured right now. I still think that was another one that was kind of like a project arm, where I think the Tigers have played conservative in the past with drafting arms, the same kind of college pitcher types that, you know, i.e., I'm trying to think of the Louisville pitcher. I'm trying to think of like the 2013, 2014 draft. What was the draft, Chris, that they went like super pitcher heavy? Is that the 2013 draft?
That sounds about right. When the year they took like Buck Farmer and Kevin Zomek and all those dudes.
Yeah, who's the kid they took from Louisville? The
Chad Green, Jeff Thompson.
Jeff Thompson. Yeah, the guy who pitched 1,000 innings because Louisville doesn't. Yeah, but anyway, I thought that was a kind of different pick for the Tigers too. And I'm an honorable mention to Austin Murr, because I was slightly aware of him because of the North Carolina State winning the national championship. I should say NC State. Well, North Carolina State. Come on, Roger. NC State. And I, because of his approach at the plate, and that was a Tiger hit. Again, Tigers have always drafted college shortstops, senior level guys. But I just liked his makeup as a professional, or quote unquote professional hitter.
Yeah, for sure. So I was surprised that Tyler didn't say Murr because NC State. And I was kind of surprised you didn't say Rothenberg, just because I know you. But I'm going to throw my hat in the ring. I'm going to cheat because it was only five rounds and you guys took a lot of guys. I'm going to go with Wilmer Flores, undrafted free agent in 2020. I hope that's fair enough. If I had to pick a guy from the actual draft, I mean, I like Daniel Cabrera at the time, so we'll say that and hope that he starts to hit, so I don't sound that dumb. And from 2021, let's talk about Flores for a second, actually, because Flores, he's got a lot of reliever risk. He's got, you know, body concerns and a lot of effort on delivery and all that stuff, but his stuff is just nasty. I mean, he came out in his first start in West Michigan, and he was striking out everybody, and he didn't walk anybody, didn't give up any hits, as I recall. Like, he was just dominant. And his fastball is, you know, mid upper 90s. He's got really good data all around. He's got a hammer of a curveball. It's a really fun profile. It really is. And 2021, I would go Rothenberg because I really love that pick. I thought that was great. I am going to go with one of the pitchers. I'm going to go with, I shouldn't do this because I'm going to butcher his name, but Garrett, is it Byrne? Please tell me it's Garrett Byrne.
Oh, Burhan.
Burhan. Thank you. Garrett Burhan. Because I just watched his start in Lakeland today, a couple hours ago prior to recording this, and it looked good. I mean, I know that college arm in low A, he's probably a little too polished for what they're doing there, but he was locating fastball to both sides. It was 91, 93. He had a good slider going, so I think that's a really interesting pick to make. But all around, I think there were a lot of fun picks, certainly, that were made. So, speaking of Lakeland guys, I mean, can we just get a quick once over on people who might have impressed you from Lakeland this week at Bradenton? Rogelio, why don't we start with you?
Well, you know, you and I are both on the Benitez train.
Yes.
Obviously, for heritage sakes, for my part, but anytime a Cuban prospect in Tiger system, my ears are going to perk up. or my eye's gonna purge. Anyway, whatever. You know what I'm saying. But I would say one he was stood out to me, and then you did a really good job today of mentioning, and we talked about him last week, and Carlos Roncado, because there's something about I was trying to think about that. I thought about this question earlier. I'm gonna ask you all four of you guys on this, or all three of you on this question. When was the last time the Tigers had four 18-year-olds in their system at one time and a high-level team, A-level team? I can't think of the last time. And the reason why I like Mercado's makeup is that he does not look like him. He looks like he's already pre-polished for his age already. And that's something that the Tigers have not had in terms of a reliever profile. But he stood out to me this weekend. But Benitez did a really good job playing some defense, made a couple good plays, made a sliding catch, show some extra base power. He's off to, I know, kind of a rough start, but he picked it up this weekend. I got some pretty good Marauders pitching, too. So, of course, Campos, you know, that goes without saying, but really Benitez, to me, and Mercado really stood out.
Yeah, so Marcano has really good feel for his changeup and his slider, right? That's kind of what sticks out. StatCast had his fastball with like 17 to 20 IVB. I don't think it's that high. I think that the calibration's a little bit off from spring training, but it's still good to see. And Benitez, I just want to touch on him because I was watching it again today because I was writing up my impressions for Bless You Boys from this Lakeland series. So look out for that coming out soon. But it looked like with Benitez, and what I really like about him, I realized he gets really good shoulder hip separation is from what I can tell from a center field camera angle. Obviously this is not perfect science I'm watching on a stream, but that means that his lower half is already kind of going almost the belt. You know, the belt is kind of facing the pitcher a little bit more before the upper half launches, before the hands launch. He kind of has that, and that leads to a lot of power. I mean, he can turn on inside pitches really well with that. Shout out to Tyler for teaching me that. But it really, man, I just like that about him. So I'm with you there, Rogelio. I think those are two good picks. Chris.
Well, yeah, I'm gonna go with Christian Santana, the youngest player in the Florida State League, who he's only hitting 207 right now, but he has got six walks, I think, already. He's showing a pretty good eye. He can be fooled by breaking balls right now, and he swings hard as hell. But he hit his first home run in a full season ball last week, and it was an absolute bomb. And StatCast did not have a distance for it, but they gave us, some digging, and it was a 95.5 mile an hour fastball that he yanked right down the line. So he turned on that thing and hit it 106.7 miles per hour at a launch angle of 34 degrees. And so I was like, all right, what are similar balls like that travel in the major leagues the last, StatCast 6-7 years? And the average is 440 feet. And again, he's 18.
Is that good? So,
it's pretty good. Like that's not official math. But you watch it and he hit the hell out of the ball. And again, this is an advanced hitter who swings very, very hard and can make good contact. And he's exciting. He's the most exciting international prospect I've seen from the Tigers since Willie Adames, which is 8 years ago now. And that's the last time the Tigers really had interesting young 18-year-olds. There was a Willie Adames, Domingo Leyva year. And then it was like 8 years before that with Avisail Garcia and Francisco Martinez, who never quite worked out, but he was part of a trade package to get
Seattle.
I think he was part of the trade to get Doug Fister.
Yes, he was. Yeah.
So, yeah, we're talking last 15 years.
And Willie Adames was a part of the trade package to get
la, 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 la.
David Price? Yeah.
Yeah, that was David Price. I'm thinking it was Eugenio Suarez. That was the
He was. He was that was Alfredo Simon. Yeah. No, Adames was kind of like, you get David Price for that. It's all right.
Yeah,
I'll take it.
For sure. But yeah, and that's the Tigers have been kind of going after a lot more of the international free agents lately. When you think about Campos, obviously Manuel Sequeira, and Christian Santana, all of whom are in Lakeland and we just got to see. But, they just got Javier Osorio, who's drawing rave reviews, which I think is awesome. Among some of these other guys, like that, it's exciting to see them finally hitting up the international free agent market. At least it is for me.
It definitely is for me, Trevor, because this is an organization that has struggled outside of getting 6'4", 6'5", beefy relievers, i.e. Jimenez, i.e. well, Fernando Rodney wasn't technically beefy, but what was I thinking of? Bruce Rondon. They had a type for a while. Elvin Mercedes. That comes to mind, too. They had a different type. But now, who was it?
Chris? I was saying that's a lot of beef. You mentioned beefy boys.
They say in Spanish, es mucha carne. It's a lot of beef. So, but yeah, it's good to see that. But again, I cannot stress enough, and you guys mentioned Aaron Haas yesterday and just how small he is and generate that kind of speed. But to see the youth, a true youth, guys that are born in the 2003, we could talk about, and that's, I mean, A, that's just kind of like, oh, I just graduated high school.
Not a real year, yeah. Not a real
year. Yeah, not a real year. But just to see that, that to me excites me, because this is a system that needed some guys that, again, we thought there was going to be a drop-off, but to see the Lakeland this good, of good talent, I'm all in.
Yeah, for sure. So speaking of good talent, there's a guy who's always had really good talent and has not quite panned out, and it looks like he might be now. And before I get your guys' take on it, because you've seen him live a lot, and you've seen him a lot on streams and everything, you've watched his at-bats very closely, I want to get Tyler's take on this, because I'm sure he's mostly stat line, and I think it could be fun. So Tyler, in your professional opinion here, what up with Parker Meadows?
He's an interesting guy. I remember him being at Texas. One of my fond memories of him was at Tennessee Tech Texas Super Regional from 2017, 2018, where he hit the go-ahead home run in game two or three or something like that sealed them going to the College World Series. So I remember that. But in terms of how he's panned out since, you mentioned, we'll probably mention it here too, is the fact that he hasn't been able to hit all that much. I guess it's a career 226, 303, 352 slash line. Strikeouts have been over 100 over two seasons. It's not been fun, but you're kind of looking at this now, granted it's 9 games, it's 44 play appearances, it's a small sample size, but 268, that's a pretty good improvement to see. Obviously, I like to see him walk a lot more. The most walks he's had in the season is under 50. So obviously you need some improvement with the eyes and better bat the ball skills there. But if he puts it all together and continues this is a pretty big development. I'll let you guys kind of talk into more on that as well.
Would you like to see the Meadows brothers in Detroit, Tyler?
That'd be fun. I'm a big fan of any kind of brothers on the same team or in the same division or something like that.
Yeah,
I think what was the Moran brothers when they faced each other a couple years ago, Colin Moran and Brian Moran.
Yeah, the Rogers brothers were just hugging on a baseball field earlier this year or something like that. Yeah, absolutely.
Last week, yeah.
Yeah, last week. There you go. Look at that.
The Ripken brothers and their infamous baseball bat.
Yes.
40-year-old reference.
Oh, geez. Okay, well, move on from that. No, Parker Meadows. So I made a joke last night, Tyler, that the new rules across the MLB, pitch clock, bigger bases, Parker Meadows has to have an extra base hit. Because he's just been going on a tear, and he's been getting extra base hit after extra base hit. I don't know if he knows how to hit singles anymore. Again, I asked it as professionally as I could to Tyler. Chris, I'll go to you first here and ask you professionally. What up with Parker Meadows?
It's interesting. I love the format of the show because there are things you can find, you can see on the screen better that you might not see in person, and there are things you can see in person. I don't think I would have noticed. We noticed Ty Madden had altered his mechanics a little bit. I don't think I would have noticed that in person, just because I'd never seen a pitch in person in college. And with Parker Meadows, you can see what he's doing on the stream. But we went and saw him on Tuesday for the opener for West Michigan. And there's just a very obvious change. We've seen him, we saw him in 2020 or 2021 and 2019. And he seems, like he's having a better time. It's hard to describe, and it's manifesting itself in not just in the plate appearances where he's getting hits, but we saw him hit the ball hard 3 times in that game. One was a double. We got a homer too, I think, right?
Yeah.
But he also hit a ball off a lefty extremely hard, right back up the middle. That was a ground out, and it was just consistent plate appearances, consistent hard contact that Lansing chose to walk him in the extra innings rather than let him beat them, because that's what was going to happen. He's just he's just very much confident now. And when I looked at it, you know, he's 22. It's even though he feels like he's been in West Michigan forever, it's high A. He's basically like he would be in his first year out of college. And so I think it's an appropriate assignment for him now. And it's finally coming to fruition. Some of the tools that we saw coming out of the draft.
I just mentioned this to Tyler actually before you guys showed up. It seems like he's been in West Michigan forever because I'm pretty sure that when they were low A, he was in West Michigan, and then he was in high A when the Midwest League got promoted as a whole. So they're going to build a shrine to him at some point. I think he's been there forever. So Raj, what up with Parker Meadows?
Well, we highlighted the swing changes. I went back a couple of years and we looked at his swing changes, and it seems like he's having the bat and through the zone more level. And the hard contact is a significant difference in how it sounds off the bat, comparatively speaking, where I think we watched him a lot sometimes. I felt like he was not getting the barrel on the bat square up. He wasn't squaring up really well. We saw a lot of those flyouts and kind of weak ground, you know, there's a lot of ground balls. And I remember that there was a game where he tried to bunt twice and try to get to use his speed, and we're just like, that's not going to work. And that's where I noticed the difference. I think whatever he did to tweak his mechanics, which he talked about on the Detroit News with Chris McCoskey, that he went back to his high school travel coach for when he was down for Team Elite in Atlanta, and he was talking about how they just kind of looked at a few things, and I think it makes a significant difference. And you can even tell in spring training was something different. He's also he looks like he's put on some muscle, and I think that's also played a big factor for him. And I think that's what's up. Like Keenan Thompson, what's up with that? That's definitely what's up with Parker Meadows. Obscure reference there.
So, one example I'm going to give right now before I throw this back to you guys, Jose De La Cruz, who's in Lakeland right now with. You know, obviously with Detroit, he was a guy last year who people were picking to break out, and he looked like he had never touched a bat before. And I don't mean that in a mean way. Like, I don't know how else to put it. He's come back this year and he looks just so much more comfortable. He looks so much better. So there's the point being that you mentioned mechanical changes for him. I think it was just seeing batters or seeing pitches rather getting at bats. There's a lot of ways that these improvements can kind of come about. So is this a case of Meadows looking more comfortable at the plate for you guys? Chris, you can start there. Yeah.
He absolutely looks more comfortable. He looks more comfortable in the dugout. He looks more comfortable in the field. He just looks like he's having fun again. And I don't know. I mean, like we talked to him, we interviewed him back in 2019. And at that point it was late in the season. And he had, like Raj mentioned, he was always trying to bunt. And we're like, hey, you know, why are you bunting so much? Basically, like, you know, you should try to be developing as a hitter. And maybe it's a sign of, you know, the difference in development philosophies between 2019 and 2022. And maybe it's just a sign of the psychology of a baseball player. But he was like, you know, sometimes it's just nice to go 1-for-4 instead of 0-for-4 and help my team win. And, you know, in my head, I'm like, who cares about winning? It's low A. But as a baseball player, I understand the need to want to feel like you've contributed in some way. And not focus wholly on your development at all times because you're on a team. And I think, it's just a good environment for him there. He's comfortable in the situation. His brother's in the organization now. It's just a lot of things are coming up Parker Meadows. And it's been awesome to see for a guy that I had completely written off.
I don't know if you're the only one. Lots of people, I think, were just kind of like, okay, Parker Meadows is, you know, he'll bounce around the org for a couple more years and we may not, you know, hear from him again in baseball. So yes, this is great. Do you agree, Rogelio? Is he more comfortable? I mean, is there a clear difference in body language, any of that stuff?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it is, he is smiling. He's having a good time. And literally he let his hair down because his hair is growing out. But he just, even the way he's conducting, just his personal, how he conducts himself, take that away from his brother before his brother got here too. I know it's a fun narrative and I'm glad that narrative is out there, but I think before he was hitting, like I said, at spring training, I noticed a difference. He had a couple balls to right field. And then when he was in training complex, he had a couple bombs too. And I think there was a significant difference there before his brother arrived there, but overall his demeanor, he's enjoying the game again. And I think he's not pressing at all. And it just, he's waiting for the good pitches. And he has got 3 walks so far to 8 strikeouts, which is, I don't know how much of it, I can't do math off the top of my head right now, but he is seeing more pitches at the plate. He's not just going out there. It's a lot of quick, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, but I felt like we've seen a lot of quick at bats from him in the past.
Yeah, I mean, he was a guy that you touched on before. He was just always off balance. He was either rolling over weak grounders to first or second, or soft fly balls to left field. He just wasn't on time, and he seems much more on time now. And to your point, bless the Statcast availability of spring training games now in the Florida State League. Parker Meadows went 3-for-3 in spring training this year. We got 3 of those tracked. He was 3-for-3 with a sac fly, and the 3 that were tracked were 99 miles an hour, 99 miles an hour, and 109 miles an hour. So he was hitting the ball hard in spring, and it's just continued. And so that's, I mean, you know, that's what breakouts are made of, right? Just suddenly you make a change and it works and you stick with it. And, you know, you're in double A by July.
So 2 disappointing at bats and then 109 miles an hour is what you're saying.
Yes. Yes. Two disappointing 99 miles an hour.
Well, thank you guys for playing the game show. What up with Parker Meadows? We're going to move on to our final question. This is the gauntlet question we always have to end every single show with every guest, no matter what. And it is, why is Ben Malgeri the best outfielder in West Michigan? No, I'm kidding. I'm a big Ben Malgeri fan. They tease me about it. It's fine. Ben Malgeri's good. Anyway, the question is, who is a prospect that you think needs more attention? People should hear about all that stuff. I'm going to jump in first because my prospect is not as unheard of as I usually go with. Like, usually my guys are off the wall crazy and Tyler looks at me like I have 8 heads because he doesn't know who I'm talking about. I'm gonna go with Jared Jones out of Pittsburgh. He was a fairly high draft pick. I think it was second round, let's call it second round, but second round, Tyler. Yeah. And I've watched both of his starts this year. I think somehow they both been against Winston-Salem, doesn't matter. He was absolutely dominant in both of them. Like, he was striking everybody out. He was not giving up many hits. He's got 15 strikeouts through his first 8.1 innings. His fastball's getting whiffs. His breaking ball is getting whiffs too. He's moving it around. Like, this dude, for being, let's call it 1 year out of high school, because he was a prep pitcher, I believe. He is, and maybe this is his second year out of high school, but he looks so much more advanced than you probably think he would, which is an omen for Jackson Job, hopefully. But Jared Jones is definitely, they're even JJ names. How about that? Jared Jones, Jackson Job. But yeah, Jared Jones is absolutely a guy that I think people need to be paying more attention to, because he looks legit right now. Why don't we go to one of our Tiger friends here? Let's start with you, Rogelio, because I put Chris on the spot first last time. So, Rogelio, who's your prospect?
It was funny because I was thinking about, like, maybe other teams, like Rochester Red Wings, and
you know other teams?
Well, because I mean they're playing Toledo, so that's the only reason why. I was trying to think of, like, okay, maybe I can, well, something else. I know that Lanson's got a really good shortstop too, but as far as Tiger guys are concerned, I think they should be discussed more. I would have to say Chavez Fernander, and I say that because there's a good possibility he could join the bullpen at some point this season, or be maybe beginning of next year, because Fernander has been able to perform at every level, and he was in the Arizona Fall League, and he had pretty good numbers in the Arizona Fall League too. As far as what he could bring as a reliever for the Tigers, just a guy that can come in and provide 6th or 7th, or like a 7th inning reliever type, I think that he should get some more recognition, because for how late he's been drafted, he's one of those ones that you're not going to see anymore. He's drafted in the 32nd round, so those are rare. He put up some good numbers last year. He's not going to – I mean, he had, in terms of the strikeouts, 56 to 58 innings pitched last year, but there was a reason why he went out to Arizona Fall League. They saw something there, and I firmly believe that he could make a run at the roster. Again, is he a guy who's going to be a household name? I don't know, but I think people should pay attention to him.
All right. Awesome. I love it. Chris, who you got?
So actually, I was going to talk about Jose De La Cruz. You mentioned him. But yeah, he's a guy, one of the Tigers' big signings in 2018. And there was a lot. He had an awesome debut in the DSL. I want to say he hit 300 plus with like 11 home runs and 16 steals, and but, you know, those kind of high strikeouts, low walks, and that's always a red flag. And, yeah, he came up – they sent him directly to low A last year. And I, to your point, I don't think he had ever seen like an advanced breaking ball, because it was, he hit 127 with like a 47% strikeout rate over 40 games. And then they sent him down to the complex league, and he was better, but still wasn't crazy. It was like, I want to say he hit 5 home runs over 80 plus games or so. And he's already got 3 this year, and he's still 20 years old. And I remember the rumors, and back at Prospects Live used to have, I don't know if you still have it. It was the old miners graph. You guys remember that? And you could, because minor league baseball, minor league baseball. I think that's where they got it from. They used to have like the data that would show you spray charts and everything for all the minor leaguers. And you could judge how far a ball went. And there were like some of the balls he supposedly hit in the DSL were 450 feet. And it's like, all right, that's, hold on a second. This is a 17-year-old, 18-year-old kid. And then rumors coming out of spring training. I think Bryant Packard said that he's like the strongest player I've ever seen, which was kind of wild. And it was just a disaster last year, but he's starting to get it back on track this year. And it's, you know, I guess he was never really super hyped to begin with in a national scene, but within Tiger circles he was, and now he's kind of a Tiger's post-hype sleeper. So I kind of dig him. And to touch on what Rob said, not to go too deep into it, but yeah, we were out there for Lansing against Michigan, and Lansing's got a fun squad with, you know, Tyler Soderstrom. But yeah, he mentioned the shortstop is Rubio Angeles, I think his name is. And they also have an interesting center fielder named Brian Welvis. They're both 19 and in high A already. And, you know, the Angeles is more of like a solid plate approach slap hitter with a little, you know, a little bit of speed, gap power. And he's hitting over 300 as a 19-year-old. And then Welvis is more of like the toolsy guy. We saw him make a great diving catch early in that series. I don't think he's hit much yet, but those are two interesting guys who, you know, give them time, and they may be something in a couple of years.
Welvis has actually been a answer on one of these questions by me. I brought him up one time back when he was in the I guess he's still with obviously Oakland. I was thinking he got traded, but that was Junior Santos. Anyway, back when he was with Stockton, I was like, this dude's hitting really well right now. And I want to throw a Tiger's name out there. I won't dive into it at all. Chris Myers has been mashing in Lakeland, and I think somebody needs to say his name out loud. So I did. Tyler, what do you got?
Oh, sorry. I've been looking at local golf courses for like the past 20 minutes.
Nice.
Oh my God. Okay. Tyler, we got to talk.
Look, Tyler can do that because today it snowed in Michigan today. It was 42 degrees and it snowed. And guess what? It's supposed to be 70 this week. So I would be doing the same thing. Here I am trying to get ready for the spring and go like, oh, you know, I'll start looking at when I can hit the driving range and yada, yada, yada. And then it's Chris.
Yeah. Chris sends not only did it snow, it snowed for like 8 hours and it accumulated. We got like an inch to an inch and a half of snow.
Priceless. Yeah. Cause
that's so funny. Cause I was just on the phone with my parents. Like, is it snowing there? I'm in Illinois. They're in Michigan. I'm like, no, it's beautiful. We got blue skies and partly cloudy. They go, really? Because we have a bunch of snow on the ground.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Sucks to be you. All right, so what golf courses are you going to, Tyler?
So there's a couple in Durham I've been looking at because there's like a random golf club thing that I'm part of. It was interesting because yesterday it was 80 and I was playing my dad at the local municipal course and I shot 84 and then today it was 50 in cold rain. So weather doesn't make any sense right now. Anyways, going on to the pick here for
we're here to talk about. Nice.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I can go on about my golf days if you want me to.
Some other time.
If I could shoot 84, I would.
Yeah. You have every right to brag about that, Tyler.
All right, never mind. Keep going. I want to hear about your golfing. So, what are some improvements you've made on your swing in recent golf outings?
Well, I've worked on keeping my lead elbow straight and through impact on my swing, mainly because if I shorten it up a bit, I'm not going to hit the ball as good. And I kind of like rotate my head too much.
What's the spin rate in IVB on your golf ball after you hit it?
Spin rate, we're probably looking at like 3000 on the fastball, probably coming off the club face at like 130.
You know, it's funny. I remember, this is ridiculous, but I remember being like 16 and getting a big argument with a friend about if you could hit a golf ball farther with a golf club or a baseball bat.
Oh, golf club.
Yeah, absolutely. But I picked baseball back, and I was adamant about it. I'm like, I can hit this ball out of Tiger Stadium, which was still a thing when I made this argument.
I think Tiger Stadium was the first stadium I had ever been to in my life. I was like 1.5. I don't remember it, but my dad decided that I was going to like baseball and apparently like the Tigers. Was like, just so you can say you went, we're going. I don't know if he said that out loud, but that's what he said to me as an adult when I've asked him about it. So that's cool. But anyway, I'm going to get us back on track now. Enough about golf, Tyler. And to ease you in, I'll mention another prospect because I want to, Ken Waldichuk. And the only reason I'm mentioning him is because you mentioned your front elbow with your golf swing. Ken Waldichuk, allegedly, it's hard to tell with the center field angle, has cleaned up his front side where his shoulder stays closed more than it has in past years. And I believe it because when he pitched against Erie, it was 10 times better than anything he did last year. And I watched a lot of Ken Waldichuk last year. So kudos to him. I think that's awesome. I'm a nerd for that mechanical change. Tyler, who is your prospect? And don't talk about golf.
It won't be golf, I promise. So we're going to stick with the Tigers theme here because I just want to feel like I fit in. All right. Eighth rounder Jordan Marks out of South Carolina Upstate. You're looking at a guy that his command is obviously the calling card. There's nothing that's like, you know, plus maybe above average. But the fastball, it went up from like 87 in 2019. Now he's like touching 98, sitting more in like the low to mid 90s. Four seamers up, two seamers down. That's usually how most pitchers goes anyways. So that's kind of just straightforward. But the heater does play up because of the command that he has. It's pretty good command. It's probably enough to make he could be a back-end rotation starter if everything pans out. The slider's improved a lot. It's now closer to like a low 80s kind of slider, but it gets a little bit slurvy. Right-handers can't hit it, though. And then, of course, he has a pretty good fading changeup in that same velo band. It gives him pretty good swings and misses. And he can repeat his delivery pretty well. If I remember correctly, we talked to Zach Nato for a draft show a couple months ago, and he had mentioned Jordan Marks being one of the toughest arms he faced in the Big South because Campbell's in that same conference as South Carolina Upstate. So whenever we were talking about this before, and I knew he was the guy that I had to talk about because that was something that really stood out to me was the fact that, you know, Zach Nato faced Landon Sims in the regionals last year, and he said Jordan Marks was a tougher AB than Landon Sims. And that's pretty impressive in its own right. Not saying that Jordan Marks is going to be the next Landon Sims, but Jordan Marks is a pretty intriguing profile. I think he could do pretty well in the Tigers organization.
Awesome. Love to hear that. Appreciate that. Rogelio, Chris, do you guys want to plug your Twitter accounts and your work at this point? Your Tiger Minor League Report. Right, yeah. Both of you together, yeah, along with
Jake. We do together, Tigers Minor League Report. It's at Twitter at Tigers ML Report, I believe. Is that right, Raj?
That's correct, yep.
And you're at Tigers Woodward? Go ahead.
I'm at Woodward Tigers. You can find me at Rajcast Baseball. And we're bringing back the Tiger Minor League Report website here. I just started the draft for it on WordPress and bringing that back. So we're going to – I think Chris and I have talked about doing a top 25. Although I'm not MCB anymore, technically that top 25 is synergy creation. So we're gonna bring that back and update that. And so I'm not sure when it's gonna drop, but we'll have an updated top 25 soon. So
that's awesome. And MCB, obviously Motor City Bengals. Chris, you are still there, correct?
I am. I just put out an article today about six Tigers who could be top 100 prospects. It was something we actually talked about on the podcast last night, and it was something I had. You know, 85% of the works anyway. So it's just kind of a fun piece. Like, hey, if this goes right. And one of them was Gage Workman. And we talked about that earlier. And one thing that I kind of think is fun is Gage Workman was so young when he was drafted. You know, 2020 class, he is 9 days older than Parker Meadows, who would have been a 2021 class if he had gone to college. And so he's about the same age in double A already. And he strikes me as one of those guys who's going to he's going to swing and miss a ton, but when he hits the ball, it's going to be hard contact. He can run high BABIPs. I compared him to Danny Espinosa, if that makes if anybody remembers him.
Man. Gage Workman is he was the subject of our first topic of the first episode of Field and Stream back when Joe Drake and I started this. because we wanted to talk about, is he a shortstop or not? So it's good to get Gage Workman talk back on the pod. And for those of you wondering, the answer was no, he's probably a third baseman, as it was our consensus. But anyway, appreciate that. Make sure to follow Chris and Rogelio and everything they're doing. Tyler, who do you have coming up for live looks for us?
So I'm taking a little bit of a break just to get like a mental reset for, you know, school semester ending and all that. But May 6th, we're going to be in Wake Forest for Louisville. And then the whole month of May is going to be a fun one. So stay tuned for that.
All right. Awesome. Once again, Tyler is at TylerJennings24. I'm at Huth Trevor. This has been Field and Stream as a part of Prospects Live.